From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Split show for you tonight. Later on, they claim that they went to Mars in a secret government program. And guess who allegedly went along with them? Stick around and find out. Here's what's happening. Baxter Healthcare has announced it is recalling roughly 300,000 doses of its influenza vaccine due to what it says is an excessive number of adverse events. Baxter is the same drug company that was caught inserting avian flu virus into flu vaccines back in 2009. The United Kingdom's Daily Mail reports that a high number of individuals injected with an apparently tainted batch of what is called pre-fuel cell. They've reported side effects like fatigue, muscle pain, headaches. The vaccine, which was crafted specifically for those with egg allergies, has only been in use since March when it was first approved for use out there in the United Kingdom. A 55-year-old man died about 200 feet from the finish line of the Baltimore Half Marathon back in October, but nearby runners and medical personnel resuscitated him and brought him back to life. A blockage in one of his arteries caused his blood to stop flowing and his heart to stop beating, but surrounding people, including a police officer, chiropractor, doctor, and paramedic trainees, gave him CPR and shocked his heart. He is now alive, and he may be a guest on the show one day. Foreclosure activity rose 7% in October compared with September. Now, that's a sign that lenders are picking up the pace after foreclosure proceedings slowed down. Last month, foreclosure filings were reported on 230,000 U.S. properties, according to Realty Track. Filings include default notices, scheduled auctions, and bank repossessions. Let's go to former Wall Street investment banker Catherine Austin Fitz here. Well, it's picking up, and that's not good news, Catherine.
Not George, and I should point out it's very concentrated. About 50% of the foreclosures are in five states, California being the second largest. So, so that means certain places are just really hit hard. And part of what's happening is you've seen a lot of efforts by the banks to clean up how they do foreclosures, so they're ready to speed up. But we have a slowing economy. And the reality is, unless we start rebuilding the local economies, it's going to get much worse.
That's a sad thing. Now, beyond that, what do we do with all these folks who lose their houses, Catherine? Where are they going to go?
Well, some of them are not going to make it. Some of them are going to sleep on the streets. Some of them are going to move in with other people. I did want to mention, George, that the House just passed a new bill. Now, one of the most frustrating things for me is that all the capital is being sent to Washington and Wall Street and not circulating locally.
Right.
And, of course, small business is the engine. And it's funny, one of my greatest frustrations as an investment banker and investment advisor is, you know, my neighbors can play the lotto and they can spend thousands of dollars a year on the lottery, but they're not allowed to invest in each other's small businesses. And that's because of the SEC rules that says you have to have a net worth of more than $1 million
right,
to invest in a local business. Well, we just saw Congress, the House has now passed a bill supporting crowdfunding, so making it much easier to basically invest in each other's small business.
Well, that's a good idea then.
Yeah, it's
finally
a very good idea. It hasn't passed the Senate, so this is something that's going to need support. Presumably, the administration's going to support it. A lot of the details has to be worked out because, obviously, if you're not careful, you could get into a lot of fraudulent situations. But the reality is if I can invest in the lottery but I can't invest in my neighbor's small business, something's very wrong.
All right. Thanks, Catherine. And, of course, 30% of the homes are underwater, which means that they are worth less than their mortgages. Across the country, Marines of the past, present, future congregated to mark the 236th birthday of the U.S. Marine Corps. A video message from the Commandant of the Marine Corps highlighted the response of the Marines to the national crises, Pearl Harbor, 9/11 attacks, you name it, they've been there. It's not a job, it's a career, said the guest of honor, Colonel Mike McCoy, commander of the Marine Corps detachment at Fort Leavenworth, saying of the Marines, it is truly a passion. A University of Texas scientist is working on developing a technology that would delight Harry Potter fans everywhere, an invisibility cloak. Ali Aliv uses carbon nanotubes, which look like pieces of thread, and then he heats them up rapidly until the objects beneath them effectively disappear. So look out for the future. Russian space scientists are growing increasingly gloomy about the prospects of saving the country's $170 million mission to a moon of Mars. The probe, launched successfully on Wednesday, failed to fire an engine to put it on a correct course to the red planet's moon. The probe is stuck in Earth orbit, and engineers may only have days now to fix the fault before the batteries run out. We're turning to science advisor and head of the EnterpriseMission.com, Richard C. Hoagland, on this story. There's more to this story than meets the eye, Richard.
There certainly is, George. This is a developing crisis on several levels, starting with the technical and the fact that something like 3 or 4 billion people are at risk. Unlike the previous satellites we've been looking at coming down over the last couple of months,
yep,
this one is about 15 tons, 12 tons of which are a very toxic nitrogen tetroxide hydrazine fuel combination, which if it freezes because the heaters on the spacecraft that apparently is damaged may not be working. We don't know that for sure, but controllers have to assume that they're not working. That hydrazine could freeze into a solid lump of ice in those tanks. If the spacecraft comes in anywhere between 51.4 north and 51.4 south, which covers most of the habitable areas of the Earth, the odds of that are like 1 in 3,300. In addition to chunks falling on you, you also have the probability of a hydrazine cloud being dispersed by the jet streams, and one drop of this stuff, George, can be deadly.
One drop?
One drop. It is that toxic. It's chemically toxic. It's like one of the most chemically toxic things that we have in our environment next to, let's say, plutonium.
Why
when the shuttle would come into Cape Canaveral, they would have the astronauts stay inside for up to 2 hours while hazmat teams came and sucked all the hydrazine out of the tanks and scrubbed it so there were no vapors that would get in the astronauts' lungs or droplets on their skin when they exited the vehicle.
What's our timetable on this probe possibly coming back down?
Apparently, it deployed the solar panels, so the news thing you just read about limited battery life is not true. It's able to replenish its batteries with solar energy, so that's not limiting their problem. What's limiting it is the spacecraft is slowly sinking into the Earth's atmosphere. The low point is like 120 miles up. The high point is 230, something like that. Every time it comes down to the low point, the atmosphere sucks away some energy, so the orbit is shrinking. If the orbit gets too low, the onboard engines, if they could make them fire, would not have enough energy to carry it to Mars to escape and then slow down when it gets to Mars and go into orbit and carry out the mission. So they have about 2 weeks before this thing re-enters and burns up. Our guys, NORAD, the Pentagon, are actually ginning up now a plan to, with the cooperation of the Russians, shoot this thing down. And if I had time, I'd go into all
really
exotic ways that we're thinking of doing that. You might go to EnterpriseMission.com. There is an article there called, if I can call it up here, The Baffling NRO Satellite Shootdown, an In-Depth Enterprise Analysis from 2003. We had an actual live rehearsal of what they might be doing. So read the article in Enterprise and then join me on my Facebook page, because the ultimate implications of this, George, we may have an astronaut problem with ISIS.
That's a good point.
The reason that is because it's common Soviet technology in the rescue lifecraft, the Soyuzes, that bring the astronauts home. If there's a problem there that they haven't detected, they might want to re-enter early in the next week or two, because after that they will lose the light in Siberia, They can't rescue the astronauts after reentry successfully. So there's a cascade series of technical and political implications. This story is just beginning, so everyone should stay very closely tuned.
All right, thank you. Richard C. Hoagland, EnterpriseMission.com. Up next, Greg Hunter joins us with a round robin of what's happening worldwide and how it all affects you. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Rapidly becoming one of our favorite news guests that we turn to in breaking situations, Greg Hunter, USAWatchdog.com. He spent years on the network level as an investigative correspondent, working for ABC News and Good Morning America for years. Most recently, worked for CNN, worked on the Paul Azan Show, America Morning, and various CNN business programs. He's a tough reporter, and here he is back on Coast to Coast for the full 2 hours tonight on Coast to Coast. Greg, how are you?
George, doing good. How are you doing?
Good. So we're looking at all these situations. Let's talk economically for just a moment, Greg. First of all, what's happening in Europe is affecting us here, and here we're just holding on. You know, some sales, some companies are doing okay, others aren't, but we're hearing foreclosures are still going up, that 30% of the homes are underwater. What's your overall perspective, Greg, on just what all this means?
I think we're headed for another crash, and I love when I do my stories, I like to cite sources. Sometimes I just say it on my own because I come up with enough sources, enough research. I say, wow, this is what it is.
You see the puzzle.
And one of the guys is Nassim Taleb, who is the management PhD, who is also a hedge fund manager. He's a consultant for IMF. Nassim Taleb also wrote the book, The Black Swan. And he's one of many different sources that say, what's going on now is worse than it was in 2008. And what's going on in Europe, right now as we speak, they are, and I think this is a real sign of desperation, they are talking about how they're underway to make a smaller Eurozone. Germany and France and maybe the UK and a few other countries. France has a lot of debt. They have a lot of insolvent banks.
Let me ask you this for a moment. In 2008, we seem to have the problem. Europe seemed to be stable. Now it seems totally reversed, even though we're teetering. What happened to them?
Well, listen, in 2008, what people don't realize, and this is one of the big untold, uncovered stories, and it's why the mainstream media is really not doing a very good job. We spent all this time on Herman Cain, and I'm not saying that sexual harassment charges aren't important, but compared to some of the other stories, they could give them a little less, copy.
Yeah.
Or Rick Perry with his 53 seconds. I mean, he made a mistake. So what?
I got three things to say to you, Greg. One, oh, I forgot. All right, go ahead.
But the other thing is that the Fed spent $16 trillion, 16.1, according to a government accountability study. Now, you think about that. They printed up, ginned up, loaned out $16 trillion, and it was off balance sheet. We didn't even know this until
we didn't know it, and there's nothing backing it up. It's all
paper. And $5 trillion went to foreign banks. And, we bailed out everybody from Toyota to Harley-Davidson.
Yeah.
You name it, we bailed them out.
Ford, GM, everybody.
Well, we didn't bail out Ford, but GM.
I think Ford took some money later on. Didn't they say that?
And
paid it back?
They may have.
I'm pretty sure they did.
Yeah, okay. Well, General Motors was more of a, they were also a bankruptcy. Everybody said they were a bailout, but they were a bankruptcy, and the unions came out higher than the bondholders. But they do make something in this country, and there was only few bailouts, and I thought, okay, I could see that. But the banks, they got way too big to fail, supposedly, because they were allowed to get big by the regulators. They were the Congress was bought off. I looked the other way. But European banks were in trouble. They were in just as much trouble, but they got the quiet bailout through the Fed because in the Eurozone, because the way it's set up with the Maastricht Treaty and all that, they're not supposed to bail out other countries. They're not supposed to be buying bonds. Well, they're doing that. Not to the extent they probably need to do it if they want to keep things from imploding, but they are doing that. So the Fed did it for them. And I think the Fed wants them to do it for themselves this time, but they've got huge problems in real estate. That's the other untold story that, Robert Shiller, a Yale professor, Case Shiller, told me in an interview that this is the first global boom in real estate.
Okay, by the way, let me tell you this. The Ford Motor Company, I'm reading this major story, did not take any money from the federal bailout program. It did receive almost $6 billion in special government loans in 2009. So they got money a different way.
And yes, they did. Okay. That, is it a bailout? Is it a cheap loan?
Who knows?
At least Ford Motor Company makes something in this country.
Yes. Yes.
So, at least General Motors makes something in this country. Chrysler makes something in this country. And we do not need to lose any more manufacturing, I'll tell you that. But so this problem has been festering for a while, and it started in real estate. And this is the untold story over there, is that you've heard about all the sovereign debt. But what has been kind of brushed off the radar is because this is a worldwide boom in real estate, it was also a worldwide bust. Guess what else they're sitting on over there? Just like the Americans, and that is a lot of sour real estate. Now, they did the same thing over in Europe. I just hosted a radio program here locally, and we had a Wall Street Journal reporter on. And I started trying to pin this guy down to do some reporting, and I said, hey, listen, here's what's not being reported. And that is, there are going to be big bank failures over there. Are there not?
That's right.
It's a difficult situation. Well, but they don't have enough money in this bailout fund, right? I mean, let's just give them the $1.4 trillion. Well, they don't have $1.4 trillion. Let's give them that because they're running around the globe trying to get it from China and the IMF and the Russians and us, and they don't have that money. Then they floated this idea where, hey, Germany, the number two holder of gold, maybe they can back this bailout fund with their 34 metric tons of gold. Of course, you know, Germany went nine and said, forget it. And on a side note, Germany's gold, because they were under threat from, the Soviets in the Cold War, they didn't have their gold at home. They still don't. They supposedly have it in the U.S., France, and the U.K. because they were afraid of the Russians blowing in.
And taking it all.
Gold.
Yeah.
And so the long and short of this is, perception is, well, I just think it's taken a little longer time for this to metastasize. And Ben Bernanke, this was very strange, he did a town hall meeting. Can you remember the last time a Federal Reserve chief did a town hall meeting? You ever remember Paul Volcker doing a town hall meeting?
Nope. Or Greenspan.
He did it at Fort Bliss, you know, because he's not going to get hit with any hard questions. I mean, I'm sure the servicemen were like, hey, don't ask anything tough. Because, you know, they're in uniform, right? I don't know if they said that for a fact, but there's a reason why they picked this stage. I don't really quite understand why he's having a town hall meeting, but even Ben Bernanke said, hey, listen, the markets are interconnected. If there's a big sovereign nation that goes down, yes, it could be trouble. The credit market could seize up.
But they're all in trouble out there. We've gone from Greece to Italy, as you predicted on this program months ago. You know, France is in trouble now. Spain is in trouble. They're all in trouble.
Yes, and here's the thing. Here's, I think, the next move. I think this is the next move. Greece doesn't have any gold. And if it was just Greece, we wouldn't have a problem. But you think about this in terms of, wow, a country the size of Greece, what's their population? 15 million? They're the size of, what, Delaware?
It's like a state, yeah.
And they can take down the world? Well, what we learned from the MF Global, well, that's a whole other thing. MF Global was playing the sovereign debt. What was their leverage? Well, 40 to 1.
Oh.
So they had $6 billion, let's just do simple math. And so they didn't have $6 billion one-on-one, you know, debt or leverage, you know, where they lost $1 billion, they ended up with $5 billion. They had $6 billion times 40. They had $240 billion in leverage. Well, you lose $6 billion in your portfolio in a $240 billion move, which is what, 2.5%? Boom.
You're gone. It's like a margin call.
Oh yes. And here's the other thing MF Global exposed. Let's bring it back home. Okay, so MF Global is a primary dealer of treasuries. They were just made primary dealer. You know, the former governor of New Jersey, John Corzine, also a big wig with Goldman Sachs. So he had to hoo-ha the poll to get MF Global as a primary dealer. Very lucrative, right? So they were leveraged up 40 to 1. They went hoofs up. Well, what's going on at the other primary dealers? What's going on at Bank of America? Well, we know their leverage is, what, $75 trillion? And they say, that's bilaterally netted. There are hedges in insurance. Well, we see how well bilateral netting worked with MF Global or with AIG.
Hold on for one second, Greg. We're going to come right back and talk about more how this affects all of us on Coast to Coast AM. And our special guest tonight, Greg Hunter, USAWatchdog.com. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Greg with this split program. So we shall be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Greg Hunter with us. Greg, do you think this is a plan to generate a one-world government? So you let the Europeans go down, you create a problem in America, and eventually everyone just gets together as one unit?
George, I'm not big on that, and that doesn't mean it doesn't happen, because it's very hard to nail down that storyline and back it up with sources and facts and whistleblowers and people like that. And I'm not Lindsay Williams, the preacher who talks to his insider people, who I believe, incidentally. And so I try to report on what I can back up and what is reasonable to get from the information. And I think you were asking where this is going. And first of all, I am very excited about this for a couple of reasons. This has never happened before, number one. Number two, on this scale, this never happened before. Number two, that many people are really unaware of how bad and how tenuous the situation is. And I blame that on the mainstream media, because they constantly soft pedal and sugarcoat and don't bring out analysis of what the real dangers are. They don't do it. And I think they do it because they think it's their public duty. I've asked this by a big mainstream CNN anchor when I was on the set one time doing one of my stories. And I get finished. It was an economic story about how the banks were in trouble, I believe. Then this anchor looked at me at the end and didn't say, is that true or is that whatever, because he knew I had my facts together. And he said, are you afraid of causing a panic? And I said, no. I think I said something like, well, I think the truth is always appropriate.
Exactly.
Cause a panic? What? Me?
Would you report?
All the banks were in trouble, incidentally. I was actually right on the money. I said all the banks were in trouble. They were all in trouble. They all required a bailout. This is in 2007 and early 2008.
See, I'm the kind of guy that if I knew an asteroid was headed this way, I'd report it.
Oh, yes.
I'd report it.
Well, maybe it's not going to be a big asteroid. Maybe it's just going to be enough for you to prepare. And I'm thinking, this is not an asteroid. This is something you could probably prepare for and improve your situation. But what's going on with what we have now is so big and so huge, and ultimately it's going to come down really to a currency crisis. And let me tell you where I think the European Union is going to struggle and go to. I think that this union they're talking about, this Euro light or this two-speed union, they've come up with these crazy sayings, which I think they're grasping at straws, but I think they're going to get the productive assets of Germany, a big manufacturer, the powerhouse, economic engine of Europe. And then also Germany has the number two holder of gold, even though they don't have it in their possession, it's still their gold. They have 3,400 tons. And then France. Well, where does France come in with their bad banks? Well, France has nukes. And France is the number five holder, if you count the IMF, of gold, 2,400 tons. I think Italy is going to be hit up for, hey, listen, you're the number, and Italy is very wealthy in terms of gold. They're the number three holder, or number four, if you count the IMF, of gold. They have 2,450 tons.
Well, if they have so much gold, why are they in trouble?
Well, because nobody wants to come up with their gold, and they don't really use gold to back a currency anymore. And in order to back your currency, gold would have to be at much, much higher levels.
In theory, couldn't they borrow off that gold and pay off all their debts?
They could borrow 10-15 to 1, maybe. They could. That would be pretty. I mean, if you were just leveraged 10 to 1, that would be pretty prudent in lieu of the fact that they're the four biggest banks, four of the biggest banks in the country, which J.P. Morgan and Bank of America are leveraged 47 to 1. I did a story.
Well,
on
wait a minute.
How big they are.
If I took a gold coin to a bank, they're not going to give me 10 times that value. They're going to give me a discount based on what it's worth. How can the Italians get 10 to 1 on their gold?
Well, because it's just like they leverage assets 10 to 1. They have fractional reserve banking where you can also take $6 billion and leverage it 40 to 1.
Right. So there's somebody out there that will do that in finance. For them, not us.
And gold isn't like – and this came – I got onto this because when they floated that idea at the G20 to Germany, they said, hey, you can back this this bailout fund, the European Financial Stability Facility, the ESFS. You can back this fund with your gold. Of course, Germany said, no way, huh? No. And I thought to myself, whoa, boy, these sovereign bonds – think about this, George. These sovereign bonds are treated as a store of value. Well – when they're sour, not so much. They were supposed to be, if they were such a valuable instrument, they could put them in that fund and leverage them 10 to 1, and then they could, and that would be prudent by today's standards with 40 and 50 to 1 leverage, but that they're not doing that. And the problem is that with the banks, they made crazy wild loans. They took huge leverage out. And now in order for this to work, they have to have the payment stream, be uninterrupted. So, hey, Greece, hey, Italy, hey, Spain, hey, Portugal and Ireland and anybody else, you're going to put the yoke on here. You're going to pull this plow and your kid's going to pull this plow and you're going to pay us back. We don't care if we made bad decisions or not. And so that's what this is about. But they can. People are revolting. That's why the whole Greek situation. You can tell. You can make all the deals you want, but if Europe falls into a depression, they're not. The payment stream's going to be gone, no matter what they pledge to you.
Here's my morbid prediction, Greg: a somewhat of a third world war to get everyone off this problem and to get things moving in a different direction.
Well, George, we are on the precipice of that, my friend, because, you've always heard this skirmish between, Israel and Iran.
Yes.
And, Iran has their proxies in the north with Hezbollah, and they have their proxies in the south with Hamas. And, they have this constant state of war, fighting rockets. But we've had that for a while. And we've heard rumors of, Israel, whacking Iran. But now we've have this IAEA report, the International Atomic Energy Agency, comes out and says, well, they've been working on nuclear weapons for a while. I think this 2003 is one of the quoted reports. And they are on the, quote, threshold of developing a nuclear weapon. Now, Israel, as you can tell, because a lot of very crazy things and very threatening things have been said by
Ahmadinejad.
Oh, yes, about Israel. This is also a country that, some of their people are still alive where they got tattooed and sent to the gas chambers, and, their motto was never again.
That's right. Can you blame them?
I do not blame them, and I'm telling you, there was a plan that leaked out a couple of weeks ago. Did you hear about this Netanyahu? The plan leaked out that they had a secret plan, not so secret now.
Exactly. Two of his former folks leaked it, I guess.
Huh? Well, and then he said he wanted an investigation, which pretty much confirmed it was a plan. Well, but that plan's not over.
No.
They're not going to go, oh, well, you caught us. We're not going to do that now.
I think before Christmas, something's going to happen.
That's one of the reports that was put out recently, well, actually today, that they think that they could hit them before the end of the year.
Yeah.
They're not going to wait until they have a fully functional nuke. But the other thing is, do they have a nuke already smuggled in from North Korea?
That's a big question.
Do they already have a nuke from China? Probably not. But North Korea, maybe.
Maybe.
And the other thing that they came
out Pakistan.
Or Pakistan. And Pakistan was very liberal with their technology, very liberal with their scientists. But the other thing is, Iran says, hey, listen, they don't think for one. These are the people that invented, arithmetic. They invented what, the abacus. These are not stupid people. Don't think for one minute they don't have a counter plan. And their people have said in news reports that they're going to counterattack Israel, and they're going to attack Europe, and they're going to attack the U.S. And then one of their other officials said just this week that they're going to have a street fight in Tel Aviv if you guys attack us.
Well, why don't the mullahs go up to Ahmadinejad and just simply say, shut up. Stop saying you're going to wipe Israel off the map. Stop saying all these horrendous things and act like a leader.
I think he's in that position because that's who they want.
Maybe that's who they want.
And that's who. So I think, boy, George, I'm telling you, if you just look at a map of the Middle East, I mean, we have basically Al-Qaeda is in control of parts of Yemen. We have, Iran that is in control of at least the north side of the Straits of Hormuz. That's only 30 miles wide. The first thing they would do is shut down the Straits of Hormuz.
And that's where all the oil comes from.
That's 30 or 40%. That's enough to put major price spikes. George, we have $110 between North and West Texas. It's $195, $6, $7, $110, $15 spread. That's about what the oil is. Could you imagine what oil would be if it was $200 or $300 a barrel?
Oh, I know that. I know that. Now, Chavez, by the way, they say he's imminent. He's going to die of cancer. They say it's very close. What do you think?
I don't doubt it, and I don't doubt that he doesn't already have a hand-picked successor. They got a lot of deals going on with Iran and with Russia and other people. He's moved his gold from the west to the east. He was moving some of it home. Some of it's going to reside in China. And so he's worried about his gold. That's one of the things I wanted to bring up about the end game of what the gold. I think they're going to be the powers that be are going to want. They're going to want something. They don't want to just bail somebody out. They're going to want their gold. Spain.
They're going to want something.
Fritter away their gold. Because, and here's why I say that. Let's say Italy, for example. Do you think Italy would put up Sicily and say, "Oh, tell you what, we'll collateralize this loan with Sicily"?
Yeah, it's
not going to do that. It's like us saying we're going to collateralize a loan with part of Alaska or part of Florida or the Hawaiian Islands. We'd never do it. That's the thing about these bailouts, George. If we had to do these bailouts with real assets, if somebody had to put up, Florida and Texas and part of Alaska.
Yeah.
Or give up the productive assets.
Or all the buildings in Washington or something.
Oh, yes, and that would never fly. But instead, what happened was we printed money. And you know how you always fight the last war? You're checking your bank and that kind of thing. Well, in this instance, it's not about whether or not you'll lose your money. In this instance, you will, in all likelihood, get your money out of a bank, but it may not have any buying power.
That's right.
They also move. They're not stupid people. If I can figure this out, George, other people that have a lot more information than I do can figure this out. They may change the currency. And what happens if they change the currency and you wake up one day and say, "Hey, there's a bank holiday," and 3 days later, whatever money you had in the bank, we're going to do a 10-to-1 reverse split. If you had $10, now you have a new dollar.
Would they do that?
Maybe. I mean, they did that in the Great Depression when they needed to print money. And this is why I don't think they'll confiscate gold. You think about in the Great Depression, a $20 gold piece is 0.967 of an ounce. Okay, it's a $20 gold piece because gold was trading for $20.67. A lot of people think, well, 67 cents isn't very much money, but in 1930, you could buy 8 gallons of gas with 67 cents.
Sure.
So 67 cents is a lot. That's why whenever you think about something in olden days, that was only $200. My mom said to me recently, "Well, my parents lost $200. I guess it wasn't very much money." Oh, no, that's $10, $20 gold pieces.
That's right. It was a lot of money.
They did that. They revalued gold. They confiscated the $20 gold pieces because they revalued gold at 35%, and they took those off the market. But we were in a humdinger of a depression, and we had true deflation, which prices got cheaper. So if you had dollars, you didn't really notice they revalued them because they were scarce because we actually let people go under. I think that was the right thing to do.
What boggles my mind, though, Greg, it's the entire planet that's topsy-turvy.
That's why I say this has never happened on this scale.
Weird.
We have never had a international global sovereign debt crisis, and particularly in the West. We have never had a global, real estate boom and bust.
What's going on internally with Russia financially?
I think Russia's doing fairly good.
They seem to be strong. And China is very strong.
China doesn't have the national resources, but they're still having 9% growth. They have a surplus. When they have to stimulate their economy, they say, we'll have some of our, couple of trillion dollars in foreign reserves, and we'll put those to work, which I think, China's in the process of going around the globe and trying to vent off as many dollar and liquid dollar instruments as they can. And that's the thing that people are missing.
All right. But right now, I want you to predict, will we have a major war within the next month and a half?
I don't know if it's a month and a half, George, but I think in the next year and a half, absolutely yes. And I think it's going to have to center around Iran and Israel. And Israel could do unilaterally start a war and drag the U.S. and Europe into it easy. And China would be on Iran's side. The Russians would be probably on Iran's side because they're big trading partners. And it could be a real, real mess.
Nuclear. Initially, I think it's just going to be between Israel and Iran. All of us will be on the sidelines watching it. But if we need to help Israel, we'll be there in a heartbeat.
Well, if China's oil is cut off and Iran supplies a lot of oil, actually crude to China, China refines it and gives it back to them. If China's oil is cut off, you don't think for 1 minute China's not going to step in and try to help Iran?
Well, it all depends on Iran's response.
Well, you got to remember, China is not the China of old. China...
No.
Remember a couple of years, or about a year ago or so, they shot down one of our satellites?
Yep. China has got
a satellite, not one of ours. So just to show us that they could do it.
I think they shot down one of their own.
One of their own satellites, yes. But the scary thing about it was, wow, they could blind us. I mean, we live and die on high-tech military,
absolutely,
right?
And we don't have any landline backups anymore.
We do not.
They took them all out.
So the prediction I have is that we're going to have a currency crisis. That's why precious metals have gone up. And you could have done something very simple and very easy in 2001 or 2 or 3. You could have just bought some gold coins. And I remember a friend of mine buying them in 2001, $300 an ounce.
Yep, $375.
He spent $100,000, and he made a 25% gain. And I said, hey, dude, you know what I think? I think they could end up being $600 an ounce a bit, maybe $1,000.
Did he get out at that time?
He got out.
He did get out.
He made 25%.
Can you imagine what he'd be sitting on now?
Oh. $500,000.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, you could have done something very simple like that. And that's, you know, I don't give trading advice on my site. I give protection advice on my site. And if you are a person who's going to buy gold or silver, that's your insurance. That's your protection. I'm not saying buy the farm and, you know, bet the farm and put everything you own into that. But I'm saying you should, that's an insurance policy that doesn't expire. When you take out a policy with State Farm, and they're a good company, but, you know, in the end of 6 months, what happens? I get to pay them some more money to keep the policy in force. When you buy, you know, precious metals, you should look at it like an insurance policy, and it stays in force as long as you control it and own it, and you don't pay any commissions. You pay a storage fee to your safety deposit box or whatever, but you know, it's insurance for your portfolio, and it's for calamity. And right now, we're looking at some of the biggest calamities financially, and if we're looking at a possible, you know, low-grade nuclear war between Iran and Israel, that's another huge calamity. I mean, the wild cards and one-eyed jacks in this deck are loaded.
Well, if Iran does not respond to an Israeli attack, then this could go away pretty quickly.
Yeah, but forget that.
But I think they will respond in some form or
fashion. Oh, they have I think, George, that the powers surrounding this, that including the United States, including you know, major militaries in Europe and us, and Iran have been planning point and counterpoint and you know, for a long time.
Yep,
there would be an immediate response from Iran. They would probably attack the Fifth Fleet in Bahrain. If they sink a U.S. ship, we are at
then
war.
We have to go in.
That's right. An act of war.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure that they would try to provoke us at this point.
Of course, they make all kinds of, you know, like Saddam Hussein said he was going to send, you know, the entire U.S. military home in body bags and things like that, and that he was going to have the mother of all wars, and he folded in 3 weeks. But Iran is not Iraq. Iran is sitting on a major choke point in the Persian Gulf. And Iran is a pretty powerful country. Now, they're no match for the U.S. military, but that doesn't mean they can't make life miserable for the rest of the 7 billion people on this planet.
Can Iran fight another war after fighting so many years against the Iraqis?
I think they're healed up from that.
You do?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Right. Yes, I do. I think they're healed up from that. And I think the other side of the spectrum is that they would probably have, you know, their Al-Qaeda buddies in Yemen, you know, the Gate of Tears is down there. That's only a 20-mile-wide chokehold. I mean, you're talking pretty low tech. You could have, a guy driving a speedboat and another guy with an RPG. And do you think an oil tanker is going to risk getting hit in the side with an RPG? A rocket-propelled grenade?
It's unfortunate people can't just sit down and work things out.
I wish they could, but we're headed, we don't have a booming economy. This is in the 90s. You know, we could take some pretty big body blows in the 90s. We didn't have to, but we could have. Well, now this is, you know, the United States has, you know, the Fed has spent $16 trillion loaning out money to, you know, everybody in the world to bail out the world. They've blown up their balance sheet. I think that's why they don't want to step in Europe, but I think they still will. Because there are 8 primary dealers over in the Eurozone, including the UK. 8 primary dealers of treasuries. Those are the people that finance our debt, that move our debt, and make sure that the lights stay on and the military it has MREs and you know, and 50 caliber, you know, rounds and whatever. So that they are 8 of the 21 left of primary dealers are in Europe. I don't see the Federal Reserve letting a lot of those guys. I know it's a surprise they let MF Global go down, but they're a newbie. But still, I don't see them letting a lot of these primary dealers go down. I just
not at all. Greg, we're going to take phone calls with you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.